The topic that I was given was described as blind disciples, blind beggar. And as Alistair has pointed out, the blindness that the disciples displayed was not a physical blindness. It was an inability to see the significance of things. They were unable to, what we would say, realize things. As Alistair has told you, and I was going to keep it a secret because it usually ruins relationships, I was a mathematics teacher. I taught for many years in the local school in Brookfield. I may have taught some of you. I may have taught some of your children. Maths is a subject in which it is possible to teach for realization. Children forget most of what they are told and remember most of what they realize. And so if you're teaching someone how to subtract, instead of showing them what to do, you do it and ask them how they think those are the right numbers. How did I get that answer? And they realize. And hopefully they remember. And how lovely it is when children can say, "Oh yeah, I see that now, sir." That's one of the rewards of being a maths teacher. And these disciples could not see the obvious. Jesus reiterated to them the prophecies, particularly the prophecies from Psalm 22 regarding the Messiah. He told them that he would go to Jerusalem, that he would be handed to the Gentiles. We have to remember that the prophecies were written 2,000 years before Jesus was born. And he was indeed handed to the Gentiles, the Romans, who were in occupation at that time. Normally, Jerusalem would not have been occupied by Gentiles, and the authorities would have been totally Jewish. He told them he would be handed to the Gentiles, he would be mocked. And if we read in Matthew 27, he was indeed mocked and spat upon. The words of Jesus confuse some Christians. The first words that he uttered were, my God, why have you forsaken me?" as he was being crucified. And it isn't clear to Christians how God could have forsaken him. God is tripartite, the Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. How can one part of the Trinity forsake another? And I have heard various reasons put forward to explain those words. May I suggest, and what a useful word that is, fellow preachers. It means that you can say something and not be seriously taken into account for it. May I suggest that Jesus uttered those words, my God, why have you forsaken me?" to identify what was taking place before the very eyes of those chief priests, scribes, and elders who knew Psalm 22 so well. He uttered those words because they are the first verse of Psalm 22. He was saying, what is happening before your eyes is what is described in the prophecy of Psalm 22. The mockery was in the very form that Psalm 22 described. You save others, save yourself. If God delights in you, let him deliver you. Almost as if those scribes and elders picked up what Jesus was suggesting, that what was happening before them was the fulfillment of Psalm 22, and actually mocked him in the words of Psalm 22. How awful is that? Psalm 22 finishes with the words, "You have done this," which can be translated as, "It is finished." The final words of Jesus on the cross. Cynics will say that Jesus fulfilled prophecy deliberately in order to present himself as the Messiah. These events that he prophesied in Jerusalem, would take place, were beyond his control. He could not put himself under Gentile authority. He could not mock himself. He could not crucify himself. Psalm 22 spoke of, "They pierced my hands and my feet." Apart from the nails nailing him to the cross, there would have been no shedding of blood. We realize that, don't we? Psalm 22 prophesies that they will cast lots for my vestments. How could he fulfill that prophecy? And yet in Matthew 27 it took place. Having mocked him, they took the purple robe off of him and put his own garment back onto him. And it was that very garment that attracted the attention of the soldiers. And they decided that they would cast lots for it because it was so desirable. Had they not replaced it, that prophecy could not have been fulfilled. Far beyond Jesus to deliberately fulfill. And these prophecies were made, may I remind you, 2,000 years before the event. Verse 34 tells us that the disciples did not understand. Well, you say, what is there not to understand? Well, there is something. And again, I suggest what it might be. If you read the words of Jesus, he refers to what will happen to the Son of Man. In no place does he say, "They will kill me, I will rise again." The personal pronoun is not used. And I suggest the disciples did not realize that he was talking about himself. Only a suggestion. But it's clear that perhaps with divine intervention, they were prevented from realizing that he was talking about himself. Before we move on, we must ask ourselves, are there things that we are not realizing? David Attenborough is a lovely man, isn't he? He's full of wonder at the creation that he knows so much about, but he doesn't realize how it came to be. A prominent atheist died recently. I'm not quite sure whether it was Richard Dawkins or Stephen Hawking. I get them mixed up. But someone asked him, "Can you prove that there is not a God?" And he said, we are so infinitesimally insignificant in creation. On a tiny planet, in a lesser galaxy, among 100 million other galaxies, if there is a God, how can he possibly know anything about us? He spoke about an incredible creation as if it was a reason for not believing in God. He had not realized the need to explain the existence of such a massive creation in a state of dynamic stability. Absolutely unbelievable, almost. Are there things that we are not realizing? I have a little orchid in my bathroom. The flowers are absolutely superb. Could it be an accident? I get little creatures in my bath. I rescue them before I fill the bath. Some of them don't help themselves. They won't let me catch them. But they're so small, and yet they can sense danger. They can make decisions as to which way to go and whether to run away. They can feed. They can reproduce. And they're so tiny. And the cleverest scientists cannot produce any form of living thing. How do we explain the miracles, the wonders of creation? There indeed must have been a designer. Have we realized? Have we? Are there things about ourselves that we do not realize? President Trump is a controversial person. He, like many others before him, does not realize the consequences of what he says. We may live in a world where we have free speech, but that does not remove the inevitability of consequences for what we say. He's currently involved in a dispute about gun control, and he says, guns don't pull their own triggers. It's not guns that are the problem, it's people. And he's right in that. But he's failing to address the fact that a person with evil intent can kill many more people if he does have a gun than if he doesn't. But he's right about the problem being people. Someone once said, the heart of the human problem is the problem of the human heart. And how true that is. We lock our doors at night, we check it. If we get to the garden gate and we're not sure we've shut the front door, we go back and look. We know there are people who will steal. We know there are people we cannot trust. We know there are people who will seek to exploit us, young and old. The heart of the human problem is the problem of the human heart. Have we realized that we too have a problem in that regard? We've all lived long enough, or most of us, to see certain words in the English language change their meaning. We used to have problems, now we have issues. If a boy's attendance at school is not good, he doesn't have an attendance, he doesn't have a truancy problem, he has an attendance issue. If he swears at the teacher, he has a behavior or an authority issue. People don't talk about the future anymore. They want to say what's going to happen in future. They say what's going to happen going forward. So let me say this. With God, we have a righteousness issue going forward. Yes. We're going to look at a man who had a last opportunity to come to Jesus. Jesus was going to Jerusalem where he would be crucified. The man didn't know that, but this was his last chance to speak with Jesus. So it might be for us. None of us know. I was listening to a discussion about Brexit, and someone was going on about the uncertainty of not knowing. And the other person said, it's not just the uncertainty. He said, you don't know if you're going to be alive or dead on October the 31st. But if this uncertainty was removed and you knew that you'd be dead, that's not going to help you, is it? Uncertainty is one thing, but one day we shall be before God. And that unrighteousness issue must be dealt with now. Not allowed to go forward until it's too late. The blind man's name, in an account given in another gospel, was Bartimaeus. Bar, in Hebrew, indicates that the person was the son of. So Bartimaeus was the son of Timaeus. There's another Bar in the Bible, Barabbas, the man whose place Jesus took on the cross. His name means, literally, son of a father. How generic. Again, I suggest that because he was under sentence of death, he may have withheld his identity, or he may have had his identity removed, and that son of a father was just a pseudonym for him in his state of utter condemnation. Son of a father. It's almost as if Jesus died for a man and his name is a name in place of which we may put ours. This man was Bartimaeus. He was sitting at the roadside. When was the last time you saw a beggar? The last time you went into Fareham? This is not an old-fashioned account. He was crying out, Jesus of Nazareth, have mercy on me. We all need God's mercy. We have all had God's mercy. We are all receiving God's mercy. If it were not for God's mercy, we would not be here to be objects of grace. Well, may blind Bartimaeus have requested God's mercy. What is the difference between mercy and grace? Mercy is not receiving what you do deserve. Grace is receiving what you don't deserve. We receive God's mercy. We have been spared from the judgment that we deserve. And we are in a position to be objects of his grace. If we put our trust in Jesus, God will give us the forgiveness we do not deserve. He understood from the noise around him that something was happening. He inquired and he was told that Jesus is passing by. Someone else told him to be quiet. But he did as the woman did. You may have studied her last week or in a previous week with the unjust judge at the beginning. He persisted. he persisted. I think the force of the story is not that if you persist, the person whom you are wanting something from will give in. The force of the story is don't give up. Don't give up. And he didn't. He called out the more. We read, Jesus of mercy, Jesus of Nazareth, son of David, rather, have mercy on me. And Jesus heard him. The account in Mark's gospel says that casting aside his garment, he arose and came to Jesus. I like that. I like the casting aside his garment. My youngest son always seemed to have peculiar friends. They used to be at home when I came home from work. There was no chair for me to sit in. All my eldest son's weird friends were in them. He had one friend, Les. He only had one arm, poor Les, and yet he was a driver. And he was a little bit down. I said, "What's the matter, Les?" He said, "My van has failed the MOT." Now, that's not what anyone likes to happen, but Les seemed to be much more depressed by the fact than most people would be. And I said, "Well, can you not get it fixed?" He said, "You don't understand." He said, "That van is not just my transport, it's my home." That garment that Bartimaeus cast aside was not just to sit on, it was not just to keep him warm, it was his home. It was emblematic of his life as a beggar. And he cast it aside. His former way of life, with its restrictions, with its disadvantages, he cast it aside. He arose. How do you get up in the morning? Are you one of these people who gets out of bed straight away? We've got to get out of bed, figuratively speaking. We've got to take the action that we alone can take and come to Jesus as Bartimaeus did. And Jesus said, "What do you want me to do for you?" Well, time's nearly gone, I won't be long. And he didn't say, "Have mercy on me," as he'd been crying out for the past quarter of an hour. He was more specific. "Lord, that I might receive my sight." It's lovely that you're here this morning. If Jesus asked you, "What do you want me to do for you?" what would you say? Bartimaeus had been asking for mercy, but now he was more specific. There was something that was more important to him. What is the most important thing that we could ask God to do for us? I won't suggest this, I'll tell you. Forgive our sin. We cannot get right with God on our own. We can only be right with God and stay right with God by placing ourselves under his grace. Bartimaeus went away seeing. Jesus said, "Your faith has made you whole." I can't see my notes anyway. That's why old men don't use them. They can't see them. Bartimaeus went away seeing. Jesus said, "Your faith has made you whole." What's the difference between believing and faith? Well, I tell the children a story about a boy who lived next door to a bus driver, and one day the bus driver, Mr. Brown, scratched his father's car, getting his own car out. John's father was very annoyed and said, I don't want you ever getting on a bus that he's driving. And one day John and his mother were coming home, and the bus came along, and who was the driver? Mr. Brown. He gave them a toot and waved. Johnny said, "Are we going to get on, Mummy?" Mummy said, "You believe Mr. Brown can drive safely, don't you?" Johnny said, "Yes." It's one thing to believe he can. It's another thing to get on his bus. That's faith. That's putting yourself under their control. Lots of people believe that Jesus existed. They believe he died. They might even believe he rose again. But they haven't put their faith in him. They haven't committed themselves to him for God's forgiveness. Our time is gone. We've looked at disciples who couldn't realize, couldn't see. We've looked at a man who was given his sight. Our prayer should be, "Lord, give me, open the eyes of my understanding that I can realize my need of you and how I can trust Jesus to be my Savior." Thank you, Alistair.